the guy could try to throw.
We had the high notes on the park. It was, that's when we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble if he kicks. The super sub has done it again. And Motherwell are back in front.
It's not a choice anymore. You know, we're going to have to be much more effective in the transfer market. And everybody in the club knows that, Lane.
Jukovic on the chase. Might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
Thick or thin, no matter what happens, we're privileged to be part of this club.
And here they come again, Rangers stretched, it's Ahmed again, for switch committing himself, and he scores! It's 3-0 to Motherwell!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I dreamed of.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the By The Min MFC podcast. Today the two regulars welcome along Motherwell Football Club stadium announcer Philip Speedy. Hi mate, how's things?
Hi Andy, good thank you.
That's good to have you on. What wasn't so good was Friday night's performance at Hamilton Accies, a 2-0 defeat. Jay, it was very similar to the Partick Thistle game 2 weeks prior to it. Lack of effort, lack of desire, and we got exactly what we deserved again.
Yeah, it was poor. I think we started okay, just like we did in the Thistle game, but we're unfortunately in a position where if we don't score early on, then for some reason we just chuck it. We just decide we're not really that interested anymore. The bottle crashes, and that's it. You know, earlier in the season when we're going through a really rough patch with Barraclough, I think it was 8 games, we lost in the trot. We were continually told by folk at the club, players, I think Flo mentioned it in the podcast as well, I'm sure Barraclough touched upon it, you know, it was a crisis of confidence, it was all, you know, to do with confidence. They don't have that excuse anymore. You know, we humped St Mirren and Accies, got a great win at Kilmarnock. So, you know, that confidence argument kind of goes out the window. I think we've just got a really, really poor mentality that's been there the entire season. It's spread a bit like a virus throughout the squad, and we're now seeing it in action. If we don't score early, we basically just capitulate, and that's what's happened. And when you're where we are with such a poor mentality, then you can't really go into the playoffs like we look as though we're going to be destined to do with much confidence, because we do appear to be a team of bottle merchants at the moment.
Buster, what got me more was at 2-0 down, even at 2-0 down, Hamilton hadn't won in a long time. A goal back would have really had them in the ropes, but there was no desire to get back into the game. We had thrown the towel in as soon as the ball hit the net for the second goal. And that's a real cause for concern going into the last 4 games, which, given the results at the weekend, are all massive games.
Yes, exactly. The second half performance was abysmal, to be honest with you. There just didn't seem to be any sort of passion or effort, really. It was just abysmal. I don't think there's any other words for it, to be fair. I don't know where there's going to be any sort of drive or where there's going to be any sort of willingness any sort of effort, really, because I don't see us putting in any performances to get any of these, you know, points that we need so badly.
Phil, it was hard to give pass marks to any player on Friday night.
I'd probably agree. I think Jay had said there that the whole thing about crisis of confidence earlier on in the season. I think if you looked at Lee Irwin's performance on Friday night, I think he illustrated that perfectly. You know, everything he touched in the match he's done at Kilmarnock, specifically the second half, and the St Mirren match right through, everything he touched turned to gold. And that chance that he had kind of 10 minutes out on Friday night, one-on-one, put it straight to the keeper. You know, it just shows that it's very, very easy for the confidence to go away. And you know, I think you're right. Everybody struggled. I think Hamilton learned their lesson from the match a few weeks ago. Tactically, I think Cannon's got a lot right. He seemed to kind of double up at times on the wingers. You know, Ainsworth and Johnson, who I think for me, you know, those two guys can be real game changers for us. They silenced both of them, and from there, I've got to say that, you know, Keith and Stephen Pearson didn't look particularly good on Friday night, and I think the concern for in Pearson's side of things is that, you know, he got that knock a couple of games back, the last couple of games at Partick Thistle and Aki's. He's not been particularly good. Keith seems to have then went a little bit awry off of the back of that as well. You know, it's just a wee bit concerning that maybe Pearson isn't 100% fit. And I think when your midfield aren't on top of it, and let's be fair, the midfield were able to be on top of it in the games at St Mirren and Kilmarnock, that we're going to struggle if we can't get into the game.
Jay, Phil picked up on it there. Martin Carrigan getting a lot right as the Aki's manager on Friday night. I was disappointed in Ian Barraclough again. I thought his changes were pretty poor. I think they were routine changes as usual. I just don't know if the man is currently guiding his, or is capable of guiding Motherwell to safety just now. I will confess he's working with a team of players that really haven't showed the commitment or the desire, but I would have thought by now he would be able to slightly change in some of these mindsets. What's your take currently in Ian Barraclough and the job he's doing?
Well, I mean, firstly, as much as I do agree to a certain extent in terms of a plan B and some of the changes he made on Friday, I think you've got to remember that we lost Lang quite early on. He's went off, so there's a sub gone already. So when you're playing, you know, an important game, Speedy's touched upon the fact that, you know, Pearson might not be fit. There's a couple of players, you know, Marvin Johnson's just back. You know, so he's might maybe be a bit reluctant to use the two substitutes he's got left. Yeah, it was like for like players. They could have maybe changed it up. But you've also got to remember that we did create, you know, enough chances to win the game. Okay, Aki's created a lot of chances, but that's going to happen because we are really abysmal at the back at the moment. But it wasn't as though, you know, we weren't doing anything in the game. So to that extent, I don't think you can hold too much against Barraclough for the changes he made, because, you know, a lot of it was probably try to be a bit pragmatic with the only two substitutes he's got left. For me, in terms of Barraclough, I can understand why a lot of folk sort of pile the pressure on or the blame. As football fans, we love having something concrete to blame, whether it's a referee's decision, whether it's you know, a manager or a player. You know, as long as we've got a certain target or a direction to channel our anger, then we're happy. For me, it goes a lot deeper than that. For me, it's a more abstract thing. It's the mentality of the players. The mentality this season has been horrific from start to finish. And mentality is a massive thing in football, particularly with your younger players. And we've got like a relatively young squad, or at least have done for most of the season. You know, when you've got a poor mentality, I mean, there are players who have it naturally, you know, Ainsworth, Figers, guys like that, you know, the guys you kind of call luxury players, guys who aren't interested in working hard, who shirk tackles, who aren't particularly brave, who, you know, can go games without being interested and then maybe have a wee bit of magic. Who knows why they don't put the effort in when they could reach a higher level? You know, maybe they'll regret it one day. But you have those players and you can accommodate those players. Then occasionally it maybe spreads a wee bit. You might have a striker who's off form, not scoring goals. You might have a couple of players with low confidence. That's when you're looking to your manager to sort of earn his wages in terms of his man management skills, in terms of his motivation, you know, knowing whether he's putting an arm round a player or he's kicking a player up the arse. That's when that part of a manager's sort of CV or his skill set comes in. But what we've got at the moment, for me, and has been the whole season, is something far, far deeper than that. When I watch Motherwell at the moment, it is the worst mentality I've ever seen from a Motherwell side. I've been going since 91, even under Malpass. We were just poor. We were just terrible at football. But in terms of mentality, the mentality shown by this group of players has been the worst I've ever seen. And for me, it's just, you know, it's such a negative mentality, and it seems to have, like, spread like a virus. you know, like an epidemic. Our squad is riddled with players who don't look interested, don't have the confidence, don't have the bravery, don't have the grit and determination, and it's rife throughout the squad. And who knows where it started? I mean, you know, between Craig Reid scoring that goal at Pittodrie and then his kicking off at Stirling, maybe something happened during the summer. God knows. But from the moment that Josh Law scored those two goals at home at Stirling, from that moment on, we've just completely folded all season. You know, and how do you fix it? How do you fix something that's that ingrained and that riddled, that something that's sort of spread throughout your squad? For me, the only way you can really fix it is to, you know, have a clear out. You know, I'm not going to advocate murdering football players, but, you know, if you have a TB, you know, epidemic with Badgers, they talk about culls. That's what we need. We have a squad riddled with a negative mentality, and we need to have a clear out. And I think if you accept that that's what has happened, then it kind of becomes a wee bit more obvious of why Stuart McCall left. You know, Stuart, we started doing the podcast, I think, the Monday after Stuart McCall resigned. And for weeks, we couldn't really understand why. You know, it seemed they'd bent quite quickly. It seemed they could have tried a few extra things. I think Flo, even when he was in the podcast, said that there was folk at the club surprised that, you know, they didn't feel he'd, you know, tried all he could. But I think McCall just realised pretty early on that the whole squad had succumbed and been overwhelmed with this negative mentality, and he probably knew that he was going to have to wait to the summer to rectify it, by which point we could have been relegated, all his prospects go out the window, his reputation's in tatters, so he cut his losses and he did the off. That sort of seems more obvious to me now. So for me, Barraclough, yes, he's made tactical errors, he did it at Partick. Probably could have made changes on Friday night that he didn't make. You know, over that eight match unbeaten run, eight match losing streak, he maybe could have done more to get his playing a little bit better football. But on the park, he has made us better. We've created far more chances under Barraclough than we did under McCall because we have better players. We're set up in a better way. The only problem is that he's dealing with an absolutely horrific mentality that is overwhelmed the squad, and the only way I see us being able to deal with that is getting to the summer. So for me, if you want to divvy up blame, then I would say maybe Barraclough 20% for his tactical errors, for, you know, continually playing Anthony Straker. 20% of the blame can go to Barraclough for where we are, but the other 80% for me is the mentality of the players and Stuart McCall. So for me, Barraclough, if you're going to, you know, give him a squad with such a horrendous mentality that has basically led to where we are, then you also need to give him the summer to deal with that mentality and have the clear out that we desperately need.
But for me, it was allowed to make wholesale changes in the January transfer window. Yes, that's a tough time to get decisions right and to get your personnel spot on, especially given he'd only been there since December. I think these guys, the majority of them, at least, have failed to impress since coming in. You've got Scott McDonald and Stephen Pearson would be the standout too, but out with them not being impressed at all with the rest, I must confess. You look at guys like Conor Grant, that came from Everton, playing in the under-20s game today. He came thinking he was going to get a regular game in the first team. He's proven himself not to be good enough so far. That's been disappointing for me. I think he's underestimated this league. I've said it before, and I don't see him turning it round. I was delighted when we get these three wins in the bounce, because I really thought we'd turned a corner. But the fact that he can't keep these levels up and keep the attitude levels up and the players, there must be major question marks over that. Yes, I agree with what you're saying, the attitudes are wrong within the players. But the management team have got to be battering that out of them, because we're in the heat of a battle and it really feels like we've just chucked the towel in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand, but I think that, you know, it's too simplistic an argument to suggest that, you know, a manager, I would genuinely question whether any manager in the world could, you know, eradicate the poor mentality we've got. We've just seen it in the last two games. Despite absolutely horsing Ackies in St Mirren and getting a great away win at Killie, we've completely folded in two games. Our mentality is absolutely rotten to the core. And you don't get rid of that by bringing in a manager who can, you know, give somebody a wee pat in the back or boot somebody in the arse. It's an epidemic, and you can't just expect somebody to come in and wave a magic wand. I would seriously question whether there's any manager who could go in. Okay, they might be able to, you know, set us up in a way that we don't get beat quite as easily. They might be able to, you know, work in set pieces, so we might be a threat from that. But Barraclough has made us better. There's no question. I don't think there's any Motherwell fan who can seriously question that we are better under Barraclough than we were under McCall, because we've created far more chances. Even in the defeat on Friday night against Accies, we created far more chances than we did, you know, for weeks on end under McCall. So Barraclough has made us better. Could he do better? Yeah, of course he could. I'm not suggesting he's done a good job or an excellent job. I just think that under the conditions he's had to work and the squad he was handed and the legacy he was left, you know, this horrendous mentality, I think it's, you know, too much to expect that, you know, he was going to come in and get rid of that. For me, the problems run so deep in the squad. The only way to get by them is to have a clear out. And I'm not sure I agree. I mean, I think Conor Grant, okay, he's not held down a first team's slot, but that partly that is because he had to play in left for a few weeks because, you know, we didn't have options there, and he's not a left winger, so he was dropped. I mean, Marvin Johnson's probably been one of our better players. You know, I think it's been a hit and a miss for Barraclough as far as that's concerned.
I think certainly by missing out Johnson and using Conor Grant as an example, possibly wasn't the best of choices, but you look at, in addition to that, Anthony Straker, Nathan Thomas.
Yeah, but on the flip, I mean, I would say Louis Lang is our best defender. Louis Lang is currently our best defender. So if you're going to say, okay, Lang, Pearson, Johnson, McDonald, those are good signings. Okay, Straker was terrible. I would say Grant and Long are pretty much as a muchness. So, you know, at the end of the day, every manager does that at Motherwell. You know, I don't think you'll find any manager at Motherwell who's like, you know, as long as they get more better signings than not. I mean, McCall signed some shockers. That's what happens. You know, I think that it's easy to blame Barraclough and expect, you know, oh, he made a tactical error. He signed a poor player. Jose Mourinho and Alex Ferguson, you know, these kind of guys do that. It's just obvious because we are where we are. And as I said, I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that we as football fans want to have something we can blame and direct our anger at. And we can't do that when it's our collective mentality.
I've got to say, in respect to players, I think Conor Grant, on what was a very difficult and disappointing day up at Dingwall in February, Conor Grant was a bright spark. And, you know, the goal that he scored from the free kick was excellent. His performance, his running, his tracking, his battling skills in the centre of midfield were absolutely excellent. But since then, he's had a small period off injured. He's had the left wing experience as well. I still think there's a decent player there. I think, you know, Marvin, there's certainly something there with Marvin Johnson. The quality of the crosses that he can put in will be a real game changer. If we get things right up front, I think that'll work really, really well. Like most wingers, his performances can be a little bit up and down. Wasn't as great on Friday night against Hamilton, but again, probably hark back to that piece where I sort of feel like Hamilton tried to double up on him, and at times doubling up on Lionel Ainsworth as well. Nathan Thomas hasn't got a sniff, but again, I'm not so sure if Nathan Thomas was being brought in at the thought process that Marvin Johnson may not have came here, and then that would have been him given his chance.
I think that's exactly why Mark O'Brien was tied up as well. It was almost get bodies in, and then we'll try and get the guys we want in as well.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, Louis Lang, I'd probably agree with you. I think, you know, wins a lot in the air, can sometimes seem a little bit rash in the challenge and whatever. But in saying that, I could probably said very, very similar things about Sean Hutchison, you know, a couple of years back. So, you know, I can see a player there as well. I think overall these signings actually haven't been that bad. I think they've helped us along. The signing of Pearson and McDonald, certainly the signing of McDonald, gave us a visible lift. And I think the signing of Pearson and his, you know, his debut match up at Dundee United, Tannadice away, you know, he looked well as well. And to be fair, I think we were sort of cursing our luck at not getting anything out of that game.
I'm tending to agree with bits from all of you here. I think Conor Grant has been a victim of his situation, to be honest with you. He was brought in to play centre midfield. We then signed Stephen Pearson, and as you said, he's been tried on the left and on the right. in regards to Barakov, you know, it's, Les Hutchinson clearly stated when we spoke to him, he's going nowhere. So whether you like it or not, he's going to be here. But it, I can't see why he picks, and I don't mean to be wide and pick out any players in particular, but Tony Straker has to be the worst football player I've ever seen in my life. He can't control the ball. He can't heeder the ball. He seems to panic when he's got the ball, and he can't pass 10 yards. And I don't know how he's even getting a game, because look what, he might be a right back naturally, but he came in and he's played 2 or 3 times here. I think there was once where he looked a bit uncomfortable during one of the games. Other than that, you know, the boy done nothing wrong. He earned himself an extension in his contract, I believe, but
yeah, surely that's be something there. Buster, in terms of, you're trying to bring on these young players, the new mentality and mindset is to bring through young players and to make a profit on them. They're supposed to be killing the boy's confidence. Anybody can see it that Straker is not up to the game. He is nowhere near good enough to be playing professional football, in my opinion, never mind to be playing in the top league in Scotland.
Again, as I say, I don't really want to go down that route and, you know, slagging him, but I suppose we're halfway there. But as he says, it doesn't look as if he's ever kicked the ball in his life. You know, and I'm sure you made a joke and compared them to Ali Daei, you know, the Hampton boy with Graeme Souness and stuff like that, but it's getting beyond a joke, to be fair. It's no far off, you saying that.
Yeah, I liked how you said you didn't want to slag him and then said that he looks like he's never been able to kick a ball in his life.
I changed my mind halfway through that sentence.
No, I think Straker's ability, if we're going, you know, we can all debate about Barraclough and what's went wrong, but I think Straker's ability is something we can all agree on.
Yeah, I'd say so. One thing we couldn't really agree on was the podcast player of the year. This is something that the guests and ourselves have been voting on over the last couple of weeks. We did get to the stage where we had a winner. We watched the game on Friday. We discussed it amongst ourselves. And to be honest, we were embarrassed at the prospect of having to award a player of the year. We did a wee thing in the Facebook and Twitter earlier on. Quite simply, I don't think there's anyone deserving of the title of player of the year. We've not scrapped the idea. We're going to give it to an under-20s player. Jay, there's been a lot of young players coming through and a lot of talents there, which is reassuring given some of the effort and the performances in the first team just now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. I think, you know, a lot's made about awards. You know, you've got, you know, the hashtag Match Attacks Man of the Match, the Sponsors Man of the Match, there's monthly awards, you know, you've got the National Players Player of the Year, Writers Player of the Year, you know, there's all these awards everywhere. And unfortunately, there's always this kind of acceptance or expectation that you have to dish one out. You know, awards should be earned, and I think we were all in agreement on Friday that, you know, there's nobody in the squad that's earned it. And, you know, I think it's the way we've went about this season. You know, I keep banging on about mentality, but that's the reason why I don't think we can give Endy a Player of the Year award. I mean, you know, St Mirren, for instance, if they had kept Kenny McLean, they would probably have given him their Player of the Year, even although they finished bottom. Because they're finished bottom because they're not, you know, they're the worst team in the league. We're where we are because of the mentality, because of the bottle crashing and things like that. So you can't award somebody a Player of the Year in those circumstances. And I don't think the players would want you to award them a Player of the Year in those circumstances. I'm sure they would be, whoever won it would be quite embarrassed. So rather than, you know, just saying, all right, it's a negative, we're not going to do it, I think to turn it into a positive and to focus attention on the under-20s who have done well this season, you know, JJ's done a good job with them, and there are, you know, prospects there for a change. And especially if we're going to be having a bit of a clear out in the summer, and youth seems to be the way to go, then, you know, there's a lot to be excited about in the under-20s. So it's a good thing. You know, it's taking a bad thing and turning it into a good thing, and, you know, shining a light and celebrating the fact that we've got some good young players ready to come through.
Speedy, yeah, as the match day announcer, there must have been a few occasions this season where you've announced Man of the Matches in a pretty depressing tone given the result of the game at the time. Are we doing the right thing? Should we be apologising? I don't know.
Andy, you'll know that the tone is never depressing at Fir Park with the announcements. Never, never depressing.
We generally can't hear you.
Well, that's probably for the best. That's probably for the best. But I think you've got to say that there seems to be movement, certainly in terms of the youth development side of things. Earlier on in the season, you had David Ferguson pitched in for a couple of games when Zane Francis Angle and Stevie Hamill were out. Luke Watt coming in for a couple of games in the first team as well. And, you know, he coped well. Lee Irwin sort of broke through, and I suppose he's graduated now from the 20s to the first team. And, you know, obviously over the last kind of couple of months, certainly under Barraclough, it seems to be that Dom Thomas is the favoured guy to make the next step up. So, you know, really, really exciting. I've got to say, I've not seen a lot of the under-20s matches. I've seen some of the highlights. And there seems to be a general focus on doing things the right way. There's good passing, good movement. We've scored a few cracking goals as well. There's been some good performances. Again, I think the season seems to have been quite similar under JJ over the last few, where things at the start of the season seem to be a bit poor, a few defeats starting off the season, and then the rally back. And I think since Christmas, I think they've maybe lost one game since Christmas, which is a pretty decent run, or maybe a couple of games since Christmas now, but you know, positive signs there. I suppose the big thing though is, you know, those guys can win every week. It's how many of them break on into the first team, and ultimately how many of them do we actually sell for a profit at the end?
Buster, it's been one of the few shining lights, some of the young boys coming in very much holding their own. That's the one thing we can take encouragement from going into next season, regardless of what league we're in.
Definitely. As Speedy quite rightly says, you know, there's one or two of them on the edge of the first team now, so it's, or well, in Lee Irwin's case, he is a first team player. Lee Irwin, in my opinion, could have and should have scored more goals this year, but, you know, he's what, 21, so he's probably got a year or two before, you know, he has to actually start putting him in the net regularly, I suppose, but there's one or two players, you know, you'd like to see Morey as well, especially in at fullback now, as I mentioned. Dom Thomas as well, it's, for a while there, he seemed to be getting, you know, 5-10 minutes at the end, regardless of the score. It seems to have gone up in the last few weeks at least, but, you know, it's maybe time we've seen even Morey as well, I suppose.
Well, that's good that you mentioned him finally. Dom Thomas is the winner of the award and will be presented it following the Ross County game on Saturday. Jay, we can only hope that we're in a good mood.
We'll see how that pans out.
Just looking ahead to Saturday's game against Ross County, results strangely went our way on Saturday, so after the disappointment of the loss at Aki's, Ross County lose, St Mirren beat Kilmarnock to drag them more into it as well. Just when you're at your lowest point, suddenly they drag you back in, Buster.
I thought earlier Jay said St Mirren had finished bottom, and I was going to say to him, but you know, I don't want to tempt fate, but they can still catch us, I suppose. But as you say, I've got a wee tiny bit of hope, and I don't know why, to be honest with you. I don't really see there being a performance in us, to be fair. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, because I've been kind of optimistic all season, and now I'm suddenly very pessimistic, I suppose. But Ross County's run had to come to an end at some point, and you know, they got beat last week, so hopefully their heads are down a wee bit, and hopefully their players have had a good bit up the bum, and you know, hopefully we need to win, basically, don't we? There's no other question about it. We need to win.
No, that's right, Speedy. There's no dressing this game up. It's a must win. We said that about the Thistle game. We said that about the Aki's game. But really, we've been presented with a third chance here.
It's genuinely this time win or bust. I think the question is with Ross County, how do they react after having that winning run? Losing on Saturday, how do they react to that? How does the pressure get to them? For us, you know, for some of the players, they may now be thinking it is the playoff. You know, we are heading towards that. And Saturday just maybe gives us, you know, the opportunity to turn that around. But there's, in some respects, I don't actually think there's a great deal of pressure on us. I think, you know, if you'd read the message boards on Friday night, everybody had us in the championship. So, you know, I think probably, bizarrely, quite a good opportunity on Saturday. And I think the other thing that we need to look at is, across the whole season, I think we've took 10 or 11 points away from home. So, you know, we shouldn't really be expecting great things at Firhill or at New Douglas Park. At home, though, I think you have to have the expectation that we can go and take something. And the fact that we've now got four matches to go with three of them at home, there's maybe just that little bit, and to be fair, it's maybe just blind faith, but you're just hoping that we can stick some sort of run together. St Mirren down tools for the away day over at Paisley in a few weeks' time, and we hit up with something which just allows us to overtake Ross County or Kilmarnock. I've got to be fair, I'd be more confident that we'd be able to take Kilmarnock rather than County, but, you know, again, need to see how Kilmarnock react to that really, really disappointing defeat for them against St Mirren on Saturday.
Yes, it's an interesting one. 9 points out of possible, 10 points out of possible 12 from our last three home games. So certainly in decent form at home. The drawback is County in such a fantastic run since the turn of the year. How does Zane Barraclough rally the players for one final go at trying to avoid this playoff?
Well, after my wee tirade earlier, you'll be unsurprised to hear that I don't think he can. I think that side of it, I think in terms of being up for it and the mentality and all that, I think we need to just see it out. You know, just accept that there are serious issues in terms of the mentality of the squad. If we score first, then, you know, who knows? I think that's been one of our biggest problems this season, is that if we concede early on or we don't score when we've got the chances, then we just chuck it. So if we get a bit of luck and we score, then, you know, we might go on and do something, because we've got the players to do it. That's the difference. We actually, although the mentality is shocking, when things go our way on the day, we can dish out, you know, doings, and we can pick up points, as we've shown in the last couple of games. But the worry is that if something goes wrong in those first, you know, 10-20 minutes, then we'll just capitulate like we've done all season. So, you know, it's an awkward one. I think a lot needs to be in, but I think Speedy touched upon it as well. I think a lot of it hinges on Ross County. You know, they're going to react after such a great run and then losing to Thistle on Saturday. They're going to react in one of two ways. You know, that might be it. The heads might go down, they might fold, in which case hopefully we can take advantage early on Saturday, or they might come back, you know, even more determined, in which case, well, you know, we'll see what happens.
I also agree that the Monarch are definitely still in there. I'm not as confident as catching them as Speedy sounds, but I think, you know, if we get a win, they lose, and then, you know, is it them next for us, eh?
Yeah, but I think the problem for me is they've got Hamilton, who, albeit they got the confidence of beating us on Friday night, that was a massive game for them to kind of prove a point and also to push one of their rivals closer to relegation. I don't know if they'll be so up for it when they visit Rugby Park on Saturday.
I was going to ask where it was, but the two of them have got plastic parks, so it doesn't matter, does it?
The one thing that concerns me, just picking up what you were saying, Buster, earlier, I didn't want to mention it, but I did during the games on Saturday, the fact that St Mirren, you know, they're only, what, 7 points behind us now, which does seem a lot, but if we're, you know, genuinely going to start believing that we can catch Ross County and Kilmarnock, you know, who are a similar distance away from us as we are in St Mirren, then you have to entertain the fact that if we can catch them, then St Mirren can catch us.
Well, I suppose the only thing there is you're talking about culling our players. You've got the option of maybe getting Stephen Thompson in. He could just spear them all as well. That's possibly one of the most bizarre stories that's ever come out of Scottish football.
It's a prank gone wrong, he says. I don't know about you, but if I was chucking a pair of scissors up in my work, I'd get the sack.
I don't think... The offer of a win bonus was really going to solve that situation, to be honest, but there we go.
Is how close is Stevie Hamill? Do you know?
I was at the 20s game today. It was hailstones and snow and everything else, and he strolled through the game. Don't think he was really going full tilt, to be honest, but it was that comfortable. The 1-2-0, first half was a non-event. Second half, scored kind of two goals in 5 minutes. Conor Grant got the opener, and then Higgins got the second one. I think he looks like he's ready to be back. Whether he will come straight back in, I don't know. Given Barraclough's loyalty to Straker, there might be a wee question mark over whether he comes straight back in. Surely now,
You've got to throw him in. I mean, I think it's been shown this year how important Stevie Hamill is to Motherwell. It's actually a bit like going back to the days of Alacari. And when Alacari was out, the team didn't work without him. But when he was there, it was always that bit where he was never really the standout. He was always a kind of solid citizen type player. I think the exact same can be said for Stevie Hamill, and you know, we have missed him absolutely massively this season. So I would get him straight back in.
We're definitely missing something there. You know, I mean, the defence is completely unorganised, as has been touched on many a time, but you know, whether or not it is because Stevie's a man looking across the line, keeping them in check, I don't know, but you know, as you say, you could put a scarecrow in a Motherwell jersey and it'd probably do better than certain people, so I'd like to see Stevie Hamill come back in.
Nice to see you're finishing the podcast being diplomatic there, Buster.
I think the thing is as well, he talks to people, he's a leader on the park. I thought on Friday night it was noticeable that we didn't really have anybody kind of rallying the troops and getting them going. And I include Keith Lasley in that. I was disappointed not to see him shouting at boys and trying to get them up for it, because it's got to be mentioned as well how fantastic a support we've taken to the last two games. The display and everything else on Friday night. The boys that organised that put more effort into that than the guys in the park did, and it's just horrendous to think. I'd been speaking to someone at the club today, and they were talking about we need to get everyone there, we need to turn up in numbers and everything else. The loyal supporters have just been made an absolute mug of this season, because they continue to turn up, they continue to support the team. Like, you look at Hamilton have had a fantastic season, and look at their support the other day. I know they are by nature a small club and have a small fan base, but that was beyond pathetic. Our fans, though, come in big numbers only to be disappointed time and time again.
You think that, you know, you're talking about getting motivated and G'd up and stuff like that. You think if you know, you've got your local rivals and it was a full stand, well, as you say, it was a fantastic wee display. They had, well, it was a full end to the stand, so it wasn't exactly a wee display, but it was a fantastic display they had on. You think if there's something that's going to get you know, get the blood pumping, at least it's going to be something like that, but evidently no.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. Talking about mentality again, but, you know, you at least expect a basic level of a professional mentality for your football players, and that's not being on show for most of this season. You know, any professional athlete should have a natural or a very basic level. Then on top of that, yeah, you know, it might fluctuate slightly in terms of confidence or, you know, positivity or whatever, and at times it might need to be G'd up a little bit extra, but there should be a certain level of motivation and a certain level of determination that is just natural, you know, a basic level, and that's been completely missing for most of this season.
I just want to touch on Speedy, obviously being part of the match day experience at Fir Park. How much has changed for you since taking your seat high in the main stand as opposed to sitting in the stand and enjoying the game in slightly rowdier circumstances? Is it difficult to contain those emotions, especially in a big game like Saturday will be?
I've got to say, as a job, Sparta, it's not a bad gig, because you get the away games to shout like a madman and go absolutely crazy and such like, so you still got that kind of fallback. In the games at home, you know, we're in a sort of glass box, or as I am now tending to call it, the glass case of emotion following this season. Up the back of the main stand in Ibifair, I shout and I bawl, just as I would have done in the East Stand, and get funny looks for the press box. But you know, that's what you've got to do. You know, it doesn't change because you're kind of sitting there doing a job. I think match day experience wise, since I took up the role, and to be fair, I think we're about a year and a half in now. I think there's an increasing awareness that the full match day experience has got to improve, and I think the focus has to be moving football away from being a 3 or 5 o'clock activity on a Saturday, or as it seems to be more often than not when we have had games this season, 7:45 on a Friday night to 9:30 experience. There's got to be a real focus on getting people into the ground earlier, having different things on and on the go for fans that, you know, that everybody wants to do. I think the club have made quite a decisive move in terms of what they're doing in the Cooper stand. I think there's an awareness that the Cooper will not necessarily match up to the other pubs in the local area for guys who just want to go in and have a booze. But by sort of changing the focus in the Cooper stand to families with the stuff that they're doing with game and the photo booth and the free drinks for the kids and stuff like that, I think there's a realisation that, you know, you can get people more involved, you can get youngsters more involved, and I think that's really, really important for the club because, you know, thinking back to when I sort of chose my team, and you know, if I'm being honest, if Hamilton Accies weren't playing away up at Fir Hill at the time, I could very well have been a Hamilton fan because it was more of a local team choice than anything else. And I suppose now with Accies back in Hamilton, I know that that happened a good few years ago, but it reduces the market somewhat. In terms of going out and trying to get younger fans interested. And I think one of the positives is certainly that the Community Trust are doing a lot in terms of their young teams, in terms of their Easter soccer schools and summer soccer schools and stuff like that. That builds up your support base, and it's about trying to make sure that you infuse those kids, because those kids will then become your well boys, and those well boys will then ultimately become your guys who, you know, hit 30 and 40 and still stay with the team and still go and support on a Saturday afternoon. And that's what you really need to do, and I think you've already kind of touched on it. Hamilton, for as great a season as they've had back in the Premiership, and that's been a great achievement, they probably had less fans there than us on Friday night. And I think that the work needs to really go into trying to reconnect with the fan base in the Motherwell area. And I don't think it's just Motherwell, it's Motherwell, Wishaw, Luke Lanark, you know, there's a good strong following for Motherwell at that neck of the woods as well, and it's about trying to tap into that, getting people back to the ground. I'd seen something in Steelman Online over the last couple of days as well, where people are saying how many guys do you go to the football with, and what's the number like in comparison to the peak, and the number of responses that you're getting back where the numbers are dwindling. It's how do you get back to those guys and reinfuse those guys. And to be fair, a lot of it happens in the park. If the product's right in the park, you've got, you know, good passing and moving, scoring goals, creating chances, and young local developing players, that sort of talent side of things, I think that comes to pass. But we've also got to get it right off the park. And I think going back the way, that hasn't really been much of a focus. I think now there is more of a focus. And I think the other positive is that there is a little bit more money about in terms of the club. I think Les seems like he's willing to do some investment, because obviously the floodlights have been replaced. Not particularly sexy, I know, but when you start getting a little bit of investment, if you get the investment right, it might just mean that the Cooper becomes a viable option for more people. It might mean the Centenary becomes a more viable option before the match, and you maybe actually get a solution to something that wins people back from going to the Electric Bar or Jack Daniels or the Bowling Club.
That's all really interesting and good stuff, mate. Thank you very much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Andy. Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
No hassle, mate.
You've been listening to the By the Man MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Yo, are you fucked with popularity? Speaking with cold clarity. The only thing that matters is peace and solidarity. I've been on a quest to defend my personality. Proud of where I'm from, but I hold no nationality. Drifting in and out of this thing they claim is normality. Zoning out, I'm conscious of fake and what's reality. A beautiful mind, I paint my own gallery. Working just to challenge me, pay my own salary. Living on the bandwagon, I speak to flatter. Surround myself with people I trust that won't scatter. With no fear, black, white, brown, irrelevant. As long as you like a laugh and your chat semi-intelligent. Old jokes are seen, we proceed with the fresher tune. Never been to uni, but I welcome every fresh your home. And it's ironic, never stutter when I speak. But I'm trying to raise something that these kids might repeat. Easily influenced, peer pressure got the best of me. Running with the older kids, constantly be testing the street. No sesame, weak, there's no empathy. But young teen pregnancy defines their destiny. Generally, they're only kids watching Kanan and Kel. I don't need to go to school, I watch Saved by the Bell. Zach Morris got me top of my class. And I listen to Illmatic, educated by now. Ultimate damage, smoke it till I'm cabbage. Pack up my baggage, then I'm out, gone, vanished. Every city's got a story to tell, but there's a much bigger pond outside of the well. And I swam against the ocean tide and turned that ocean to a river like the fucking clay where I reside. I'm unknown, but the king of my own home. Been around the map, good proof in my own phone. Mature fact, well grown before my years. Class my street smarts, I'm wiggy on my beard. For back as a child, I was stupid, running wild. I was only